When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
Repeat after me. I am not defined by my past trauma.
I am not defined by my past trauma.
I am not defined by the negativity that surrounds me.
I am not defined by the negativity that surrounds me.
Hi, honey, it's Mom. Your father and I were just thinking about you, so I figured I'd give you a call to see what's going on over there. For the most part, everything over here is going pretty good. You know, we actually had a few of the neighbors come over, and we had such a fun time playing this game. Basically, the idea is that you pick a card, and whoever picks the card is the judge, and everyone has to write down something that they think would make the person laugh. And it was just so funny, because as you know, we've been living on this block for over 20 years, and I have to say, our neighbors really know our sense of humor.
It's explicit. You can talk about whatever you
awesome.
Want. Yeah,
whatever you want.
Whatever comes to mind.
Yeah. Open conversation. Yeah, we'll make this. This is ours. It doesn't belong to anybody else. This is independent. You know, it's all in.
I like that. It
belongs to us. Nobody checks on us.
Right.
Shay, I was talking. One of the things I was wondering about, looking at your two bands, and as I mentioned to Matthew before, I've been particularly sensitive and noticing the kind of the presence of sound and soundtrack to create mood in the video work that you do. And one of the pieces I was wondering, as far as your work with music and over towards video, you have a lot of sounds, a lot of words, a lot of verses that you end up seeing floating over and seeing as that show up on the video work you do with Matt.
Yeah, actually, some of my lyrical references are direct references to some of Matt's movies, and sometimes things in like either of our lives. So definitely, it's like connected there, and like. Like I was saying before, like my process recording vocals for Cronies and doing, soundtrack for Matt is similar because I like record vocals and bass for Cronies. I run it by them. They let me know if it's good. And similarly, just trying to like fit the vibe with Matt's score and stuff like that. And then when I make, my solo stuff, like Real Coddington Factory stuff, like that's a lot of me just kind of doing my own thing. So that's a little different. But like, definitely my processes are the same. And, obviously there's influences in film and, you see that a lot in like the samples that happen in some of the like music, and then it's like, you know, some of it is like samples from films that me and Matt made, and then it works the other way around too, because like I have a score that I make for Matt's stuff, and it's like, you know, it ends up being like sometimes like distorted or like very like guitar pedal driven or like sampler driven, like just stuff that I would do in Cronies. So like, I guess it ends up just working together, you know, to hopefully be like more unique in that way.
And in terms of like relationship to film, also Shay's stuff, you know, I'm a personal fan, of course, of Shay's music. So I've kind of analyzed it in my own way. And I noticed that a lot of movies that Shay and I both like, or that are inspired by, like that make us want to make the movies that we make or the movies that I make, he'll use samples from those movies in his music. Like there's a lot of Uncut Gems,
Tim and Eric's Bedtime Stories.
Yeah. And even videos that we've made, because Ken, I don't know if you know, but Shay and I have actually been friends since we were 8 years old.
I remember you mentioned you long time. Yeah.
Yeah. So we met in fourth grade at the lunch table.
Yeah. And we've been making videos together since probably around that time, or like, well, like a
wow.
year.
In sixth grade, my dad bought me like one of those, like, you know, cameras that were like, they kind of looked like phones almost, but they had like the little like camera there. They're like flip video, and they had like the USB.
Yep.
And so we'd record with those. And like, we didn't have an editor at the time, so like we tried to like edit on the fly. Like if we wanted music in the movie, like we would put our iPhone speakers up and we'd press the YouTube play button and the record button at the same time, and then press stop, and then, you know what I mean, just keep going on the next shot. Like, if we wanted, so we were definitely desperate to make it work for a long time.
Right.
And then Matt got an editor finally, and then go ahead. Sorry, Matt.
No, I was going to say, in the same regard to the iPhone speakers up to the camera, like if we wanted to cut to black or something like that, we would like put our hand over the camera. Because like we can't edit, you know. So those old childhood videos, even Shay's taking sound bites from that stuff and put it in his music as well. And I'm always surprised to find, because Shay's very like, you know, Shay kind of works on the album, and I know nothing about what's going on, and then it just gets released, and then I get to like check it out, and then all of a sudden I hear like young me's voice show up in the album all of a sudden. It's like there's like little like tidbits. I was just going to say, there's like, it almost seems like, you know, regardless of, you know, me being in it or not, there's just a bunch of tidbits of like Shay's past, you know, and life just kind of peppered in throughout the music, that it goes beyond just instrumental and vocal, you know.
Yeah. I like that though, like when music adds like a wholesome like element to it. Like Cronies has like a lot of like clips from Goodfellas and like, you know, a lot of like mob movies and stuff like that, and, you know, horror movies, stuff like that. Old like 70s flicks, and, you know, Jack, the drummer of our band, is like really into that stuff, and, you know, so like it kind of gives it like a, you know, like a vibe. It's like what you grew up with, and it's like what you're representing yourself as is like similar.
Yeah, I like the editing process. I took my first like video film class, and it was like using like iPhone to help create film. And, you know, like I had the question. It was such an art film school answer. I was like, I'm trying to have this black in the background. Like, everybody knows you just put your finger over the camera lens, and there's your black filler. I'm like, It is as I thought. You just cover it up and
imagine doing that now, Matt, with your new Leica lenses, right. Vintage lenses, just like putting your whole hand over the glass.
Right. It would be experimental for sure. You know, maybe that'd be something interesting to try in the future. But I also think it's interesting. I was just gonna say, springboarding off of what we're talking about, I kind of found it interesting to think of how Shay's work individually and my work individually have kind of ping pong back and forth, and then we'll come together to work on individual things. But he's been doing score for our stuff since whatever, like 2013 or whenever we made our first movie. And I always noticed that kind of the score that he'll make will resemble whatever current genre or interest or whatever it is, style of music that he's into at the time. So like, if you go back to like 2017, when we made our short film called Megan that stars Shay, you can kind of hear that the score that he provided for that links up to the kinds of the kind of music that he was making at the time of that short film. And then now, like with the most recent collab we did, which is Henry, his music is more noise rock based, more pedal based, you know, in his personal music. Thus, the movie Henry has a score that is like very pedal heavy and very noise rock influenced, because of like distortion amp sound almost. So it's interesting to kind of watch. Like, I almost know what to expect in a way when I ask for a score, but I'm, you know, and I'm still surprised, but it's kind of interesting to see, like, or listen to the music that he has coming out and knowing, oh, this is probably going to be what the score will sound like for the movies.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting.
I recently have been hired to do a couple of like soundtracks for different things. Like, one's like a romantic comedy that needed just like kind of R&B type stuff.
Yeah.
And one is this other thing that I haven't actually done yet, but it's like, you know, I guess a bit more experimental, but not like in the way that, you know, I try to be with Matt. Matt just kind of lets me kind of do my own thing. Or, I mean, he gives me like a mood to start with, and, you know, we make the movie together a lot, so I can, so I see what's going on. I kind of try to picture what's going to go in it later. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, a lot of it's just experimentation, just trying to figure out like what the best thing is. So it's not like always clear, but it's like, you know, I feel like there's a, like, I feel this way about Cronies too, and I feel this way about the scores in Matt's movie. When I'm making it, it's like there's like a something in there already that needs to be chiseled out of it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of just like my approach, because like I know there's something that's going to fit best, and so I try to just go for that rather than just like, you know, go for like a vanity thing or go for something that like I would like best. But again, like, Matt kind of lets me a little bit off the hook in terms of going for what I want, because it's kind of what he would want too.
Yeah. An incredible process.
What's the romantic comedy? I didn't know you were doing that.
Yeah.
I heard that too, Matt. I heard that too, Matt.
X Game.
Oh, that.
It's a romantic comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Matt filmed and edited that.
Right. Well, no, because those episodes are done. But I forget. To me, they're so out in the rear view, you know.
Are they?
No, you're right. The most recent episode just came out. I think I try to put it in the rear view as much as I can when I'm done with something.
Are you done editing that, though? Like,
yeah. Yeah. That's okay. Done. That was a five. I got hired to do this like romantic comedy episodic series called X Game that's on YouTube, and the director was in Albany at first, and then he moved to Los Angeles, and he's like, sorry, Matt, like, you know, I wanted to go with you as the DP editor, but, you know, I'm in Los Angeles now, and like I was in the winter, I get horrible seasonal depression, so like I just wanted any excuse to leave, because it was like right around January at the time. And I was like, oh, no, you're doing it in LA. I'll go. I'll fly out there and I'll do that. And I took like not a loss, but I pretty much like broke even shooting that just so I could hang out in LA for like 2 months. But it was a great experience. Yeah. And the show, you know, it's entertaining, and it was fun to work on for sure.
Didn't fly, did you? You drove.
Yeah.
And you got horrible food poisoning halfway through and kept driving anyway.
Yeah,
we're just going off the rails.
No, no. Well, and the thing is, even if there's a project update where we can make sure it's shared here about where the status of things are.
Right. Yeah. I was gonna fly because I figured that would be cheaper, and then I had all this all the equipment that I needed, and you know, it was just gonna be so much to fly over to LA. And I think I always wanted to try driving across the country. So I kind of just took the opportunity to do one, you know, like solo road voyage, you know, go out to LA, make a thing. It's like it's always been like a fantasy of mine to do. So yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. Sure. There's a road here in Newport, Oregon. Actually just drove past it yesterday. It's on the coast, and it shows Boston, Mass on it. And it's like 3,325 miles. It's Route 20 that goes across the U.S. and starts over in Newport, Oregon, out to Boston. So,
oh, wow.
You could take 20. It'll probably take about 2 weeks, and that wouldn't work for you. But anyways, it's just really cool. Matt, what about with Trusted Hands? You recently released it starring Victoria Studo. And that came out just recently. What's going on with the film? Where do people find it? That type of thing.
Yeah, so all my short, a lot of directors like to withhold their short films for festival purposes.
I knew you were going to start saying that. I knew you were going to go.
I've been thinking about that a lot today, actually, because I was like, oh
yeah,
man,
me too.
Am I not making the right move here by releasing my movie? Like, I always release any short film I make immediately when it's done, and I release it just on my Vimeo, and I promote it on Instagram, and I'm like, everybody just go see it. Like, I just want people to watch it so they can talk about it. And you know, it's nice to get quick reactions. I like immediately, you know, hearing what people have to say about the movie the minute it's done. But some directors like to, you know, withhold the movie because there are certain festivals that want to premiere their movie exclusively and be the first to premiere it. So, like, you know, a lot of directors are secretive about their projects and they'll let it sit and, you know, let no one see it for 6 months or whatever it is, only to find out that 6 months later, Sundance, big surprise, said, you know, we don't want your movie, you know, because tens of thousands.
Big surprise.
Because tens of thousands of movies are submitted. So I never want to do that, especially because, like, Trusted Hands came out, right? And, like, I have two other short films as well that are in the middle of, like, I haven't even started editing them yet, but, like, they're about to be. And Shay and I are going to work on a movie coming up too. And so I just feel like by the time Trusted Hands would be accepted into some festival, if it was, you know, that was so exclusive about its premiere status and all that stuff, I'd be already moved on and finished with the next one. And I just want to be promoting that. So I figure whenever we work on a feature in the future, I'd probably maybe withhold that or maybe just allow people to see it via like a private link or whatever. But in terms of the shorts, you know, I just like to get them out there as soon as possible. And, you know, there are plenty of festivals out there that are cool about you releasing online. Because I think, you know, that's kind of the generation that we're living in now, you know. So, you know, I think it's important to just release it as soon as you can and then, you know, let it get into whatever festivals exist that are into it. And, you know, because of that, because, like, you know, we released House to Herself and Henry that way, we got great opportunities to film movies, you know, with bigger budgets than we've ever had before. And that, in a way, allows us to then fund the next few movies, you know, so... I think it's important to get it out there as soon as possible. So that's what I did with Justin.
Yeah, and I was just saying, I was observing some of the dynamic you see. And one of the things newer to seeing distribution films of how it's released, I find a film to be such a labor of love, so intensive. And then it's how it gets out there. And as you explore, and it's like, I need people to see this thing. You know, I'm over here doing this. Mm-hmm. Both of you guys are like, you gotta see the stuff. Same thing with it within music. Right. You know, like, you get people gotta hear that. And I found that in just seeing some of the things you promote and talk about, that there are significant films that still get attention because it wasn't like they're on a particular sequence. If you like Henry, you bring about Henry, I could like that film. And when she was talking about like the sound and some of the things adding terror to it, like it brought that wraith to my head. And Daddy's Wallet, which is like, and House to Herself, which is gorgeously shot in each of your films too. Maybe it is what I just wanted to ask too. Your films are held up, you know, it could be Shay and others that are held up by subtle performances of folks that you have in there. I guess one of the strange questions is how do you get and find somebody who can handle this, you know, it might be this type of like intense role. Maybe not a lot of talking, maybe a lot of like moving to the sound connected to face in, you know.
How do we?
Yeah.
How do we find them?
I don't know. I think it's like it's a casting thing for sure. Like I definitely can tell.
I think we just get lucky.
We do get lucky, but I also think that by an audition, I can tell pretty quickly that the actor is not in the same like headspace that Shay and I are in. I don't know how to explain it. I almost feel like through the audition, I can tell if it's the kind of person that I would want to collaborate with or like talk to or hang out with. And if they're that kind of person, then I feel like they're the right fit, you know,
for Daddy's Wallet. It's a good start.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I mean, actor wise, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that because like a lot of the actors now at this point are just, you know, people within our own friend group or, you know, like Shay is going to act. He's going to be the lead in the new movie that we're going to make. And he's done one of ours before. And Alex is an old friend of ours.
So I think like Alex, Victoria, and I, and my girlfriend Diana, who is going to be in this movie with me coming up, like have all seen the movies that Matt likes, and we like them too. So we know what kind of vibe he wants and what he's going for, like, especially because we talk about it a lot, like, and I'm sure like Matt and Victoria like talk about it a lot when they're like making Trusted Hands, or when they were or when you guys like they have like another movie together too.
Yeah, Victoria's
they have two other movies together
for the record. Victoria and I are we've been dating.
That wasn't clear.
We've been dating for the last year, and so now we have we have two more movies coming as well.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Shay.
Well, what I wanted to say about like you know, when it's not a friend or you know, it's you know, we'll usually go through backstage, and the last few times we've definitely gotten lucky, and people have like you know. Got you know they've auditioned like quickly, and you know they're reliable, and they're you know even they feel challenged though, even though they're good actors. Like Desi Stevens and like Dan Berkey are two like really talented actor / actresses that like audition almost immediately, and like we didn't really need to go through anybody else. But like Gloss, which is a movie we made like years ago, we went through about 30 people. Came to our apartment and like auditioned for this role, and like a lot of people weren't good, and a lot of people were pretty good and okay, but then only a few like really stood out to us, and that's who you see in the film is you know, like Hailey Berkeley, who's like you know really talented, like even says that she was challenged by Matt's role. So I think it like kind of goes both ways. I think actors want to work with us because we write challenging roles.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the time it's like, I don't even know if I've ever had a situation yet where I feel like, oh man, like I really like both of these people for the House to Herself role, or both of these people for the Daddy's Wallet role. Like it's always just one person that's so clearly right. And I don't know what that says, or, you know, it must just say something about their acting ability, you know, or what I'm picturing in my head. But sometimes it doesn't even matter what I'm picturing in my head, because for Daddy's Wallet, the main character was supposed to be like a middle-aged or like more like 40s, you know, year old.
That's not what I pictured when I first read the script.
Really?
Yeah.
I was picturing.
I told you that though.
Oh right. Yeah, I was picturing someone younger than Dan, and then when I saw Dan, though, I immediately was like, "Oh, this is so right." And right, I remember showing you Dan's audition. Yeah. You're like, "No, this is right. This is what I'm picturing." You know.
Yeah. He was good.
And he was just so good, and he was so committed with the audition. Like he really didn't, you know, how do I explain it? Like his audition tape was definitely kind of experimental. Like he made sure he looked disheveled, and he almost acted like the character immediately to show us how invested he was. And I think that was a big part of why we picked him, because I was like, well, he's already going this hard with the audition
tape. You know, Dan Berkey does this kind of like mumble talk that's similar to the way Joaquin Phoenix sounds in The Master, where it kind of like sounds like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
and I think that kind of grabbed us a lot, because that's what he did in his audition. He was like in a robe and like had like, I think a glass of liquor or something, and just like, you know, like a 5 o'clock shadow, like look really bad. And then just kind of like gave it to us. Like, and then we got other auditions, and you know, the dude just read the script and it was fine. Like it was solid. And, you know, I think a lot of directors, fail to look past the fact that like an actor is just, you know, good enough. And, maybe it's just cause, you know, some people just don't write challenging enough roles or whatever it is, but, you know, you just know when you see it, I think.
Yeah, and our role specifically, we like to, I mean, I definitely want to portray the human psyche and in all of its grotesque ways, you know, so, you know, I tend to, it's like not uncommon for a role of mine to include masturbation, throwing up, crying, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, so it has to be someone that would be interested in doing that kind of stuff. Like we've definitely gotten actors. There was a movie that we made called Weird Cupid. I don't know if you've seen that one.
I haven't seen that one.
But the character admit that's on my Vimeo as well. The character admits to having a 3-inch penis in the end, or like towards the end. And we got a lot of actors that were like, I would never say that. You know, I'm sorry, I cannot take this role. And it's like, good. We don't want you to take this role. If you feel so threatened, your masculinity is so threatened that you can't say in a movie that you have a 3-inch penis. Like, firstly, I think it shows that you probably do have a 3-inch penis. and then secondly, we don't want to deal with somebody who is like all like getting hurt personally by the content. We want someone who's like, wow, that's so funny, or, you know, that's so interesting. I can't wait to say that I have a 3-inch penis.
You need somebody all in and be like, 3 inches is where it's at, jump right in. Like, don't worry.
With the actor, Frank Fallow, we found that. I mean, he was perfect. He was perfect for it.
Like, even a guy like, like a lot of Paul Thomas Anderson's characters, and a lot of, like, recently, I'd say, and a lot of, like, Safdie Brothers characters, like all do like the same kind of stuff where they're like grotesque emotionally and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you see guys like, you know, Adam Sandler in both of those directors' cases, like, and, you know, other great actors like doing like all that kind of stuff. And it's like, if you look up to those actors and you like them, then why wouldn't you want to do that yourself? Why wouldn't you want to challenge yourself in that way? Like, I think it's not about, you know, because I'm not going to go see a movie that stars The Rock, because I'm sure it's just him, like, you know, being a badass and exploding car. No offense to The Rock. Like, I don't know.
No, like, he's going to be our president. He's going to be our president someday. So mad respect to The Rock.
Yeah, The Rock gets plenty of love on podcasts, I think. He gets enough love.
Right. Yeah, no, we love Paul Thomas Anderson and the Safdies. We look up to them a lot. I'd say The Master. You know, Shay and I were, you know, whatever, 17, and we were so excited to go see The Master that we, like, you know, we were living on Long Island at the time. That's where we both grew up, and we, like, you know, rode the subway, like, you know, took a train out to see The Master, and, you know, it's like opening weekend, and it just blew us both away. Like, we were into
everything. It was screened on 70mm film in this one theater. Oh. Yeah, we went there with Matt's sister and her boyfriend at the time, because we weren't really, like, I mean, we were old enough, but, like, they, like, you know, bought us, like, street food, and they bought our tickets or something like that. I definitely remember them buying us street food.
Yeah.
I forget what the name of the theater was. I think it was the Angelica.
It was the Angelica.
We saw it there, and it was a really good time. Like, one of the best film experiences I've had. There was also the time where we saw A Clockwork Orange in Denver screen on, I think it was 70mm film also.
Yep.
And that was also a really good time, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, just being inspired by stuff like that, I guess.
I really, the film experiences and going to film. I had one thing I figured I mentioned. It was just such a cool event. I was at a Czech film festival at the Portland Art Museum. And just, you know, like, I had cleared out just like a couple of days of being like, okay, I haven't even seen any of these films. And just, this is a few years ago. And I was watching this really incredible film. And the actress from... She was from the Czech Republic. She spoke Czech. She was sitting in the row in front of me. So as I was watching her on the screen, I looked over and I was like, oh my gosh, it was just such a wild experience. I never had, you know, you have it in other environments, you know, with a lot of entertainers, but it was really strange. And it was, I love that kind of like disruption at times of this kind of reality and reflection of reality going back to, you know, So
some people go really hard on that. Sorry. I was just going to say, some people go really hard on that. Like, you know, characters like Gaspar Noé, you know, like they go really intense with that.
To make their movie, it's such a visceral experience.
And then that's like the point of the movie almost.
Yeah. Well, we're going to jump to, just out of nowhere to, Shay's, work with, Cronies, New York. We got the track, $1 Million Mutt. Here we go. Cronies, Shay Glasheen. Of course, we're talking with Matthew Kyle Levine. Off to the music right now for a few moments.
Two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like the two of our blood, buried in the subway like got better and better. He tried to his teeth, he just knew the butter. The more that he ran, just got better and better. The more that he ate, just got better and better.
Straight up my alley, Shay.
Oh, and, thanks.
I'd imagine up the alley around a lot of folks who listen to this show.
Yeah, that one just started as a jam between me and Jack one day. It just like during COVID when things kind of lightened up a little in the like at first, like you know, I just went over his house and we jammed and like we did that and like I recorded video of it just like on a camera and so then like later. We developed it into a song, and you know, Brad added some lyrics. It's really dope. Cool it's, how it developed.
It's a fucking incredible track.
Thanks.
Thanks for sending that over. Everybody, check out Cronies and recording here from Albany, Oregon. Hopefully, get the Cronies sometime out of the way all over here on the left coast.
You guys got to do a West Coast tour one day.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. We're, we're working up to it.
Yeah. Well, the podcast supports all, West Coast endeavors, and mad respect to the East Coast, being born and raised in Rhode Island, Pawtucket, Rhode Island. So yeah. So made my way all the way out of West, but deep in my DNA.
There's some New England in you.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Yes,
Oregon's really cool. Hardened.
I went out. The outdoors here is quite incredible. I actually just came in from a place, Cape Perpetua, and out into the woods and looking, just hiking. Did a 4-mile hike yesterday and made it back into civilization today. Mm-hmm. So a lot of wonderful stuff out here. So yeah, we've been talking about the film and music. And Shay, you're going to be a little bit on the spot right now. I mean, Matt's already done.
Oh, let's go.
Matt's already done the big conceptual questions, and right. I don't know. He hit him out of the park already. So it's going to drop on.
I need
you.
Him here, though.
No problem. So the show, you know, episode 163, 164, and talk about a lot of important questions to artists. And one of the big ones I have is what is art? You're an artist, Shay. You're doing the music. You're working in film. You're doing all your things. What are you up to? What is art?
What am I up to? Like right now, just doing a lot of music projects, film projects. Let's see. I paint a lot. I draw. I do a lot of t-shirt designs for my solo project. So I do a lot of screen printing and stuff like that. I just do a lot of, it's more, whatever you call, what's the word? Something where you can, it's adaptable, I guess. If you're an artist, it's, you can kind of adapt to different art styles, more easily. Matt makes a lot of music, and Matt actually did the score for Trusted Hands, and he did he does a lot of the sound design for our movies, just in post, there's no one else there helping him with it. So he ends up just doing it himself. And especially for Miss Freelance, there's a lot of cool tricks and sound design that we copied and used for Daddy's Wallet. So just in terms of what art is, I guess to me, it's just it's just, it's a skill just like athleticism, I guess, just, being able to produce art, I guess. If you're good at one sport, it's likely you'll be good at another sport, and I guess art just works the same way to me.
Thank you what do you think the role of art is? I've asked this of a bunch of artists over time, and sometimes the answer to the question be a little bit different with political turmoil, pandemic, what is the United States in 2022, 2023? So do you think the role of art, the role of art has changed in recent times, or it's just, this is the latest type of things we're dealing with as humans, and it's just art is, art? Do you think it's changed at all, the role of the art?
Not exactly. Because I think the Renaissance is response to I don't know. I don't know too much about the Renaissance, but I think it's a response to the Dark Ages,
plague and everything.
What was that?
Wasn't it a response to the plague, the Black Plague?
Yeah, stuff like that, artistic revolutions. I don't know, maybe if I can go a little less further back. I'm a big fan of Rage Against the Machine, so obviously they have a lot of political commentary in their music, and I think it's done right. I think a lot of times it's a means for people to get more attention on their music, and it's not necessarily something new or something super poetic, but it's great that people want to use that as a platform to promote what they want to promote. Everybody can do what they want, I guess. It's just what you make of it. I don't go super into that with my own art. I think in a lot of ways things are implied, in the way I feel about things. But again, it's just like another form of expression. Of course, there's a part of me that like feels a certain way about certain, you know, issues politically or just like, you know, personal issues in my life. And then those obviously come out in art. You know, it's just, you know, it's just like how I as a person reflect on my viewpoint of the world more, you know, more on a subconscious level, like, you know, on the, on a conscious level, I'm just like, you know, having fun. I'm playing a guitar or whatever. Yeah. It sounds good to me, but
express you know, sure. Yourself.
Yeah. I think no matter what you do, it's an expression of like who you are and everything that's happened to you, I guess.
If you do it right.
Yeah.
I feel like, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to ask you, Matt, one of the things as I was asking the question just popped into my head as far as with the films is that there tends to be this distinct, theme of, distress or isolation for an individual dealing with a situation seems to be very focused on a smaller number of characters and interiors. And was any of that, I mean, that's part of some of the things I've seen in your work. Was any of that part of the result of the pandemic or any constraints that you had right there as far as somebody's in the house? They're in the house. It's a setting. It's a closed setting. There isn't the external world seems far at times. Mm-hmm. Has that been part of it, Matt?
I guess it's got to be. You know, When I'm writing it, I definitely don't think about that. I'm not like I got to make a pandemic movie. You know, we know some directors who do things like that. Like they're like, oh, the pandemic. I got to make a movie that comments on the pandemic.
Yeah.
For and that's, you know, yeah, like having a political motive behind your movie is an interesting thing to do. And I think I've seen movies where I like when that's done, but I definitely just kind of write what I think would be interesting. And I normally think about the character first. But normally to some greater extent, the character is always a reflection of me or, you know, someone that is close to me or just a general sense of the people that are around me. And I start there. And then I think what we were saying before were like, you know, what is art and what does it cause change or what does it reflect and all that stuff. I think if you do art for the right reasons, not to say that there's one right reason over another, but, you know, if you're doing it for, you know, if you're making something that's like a piece of you, no matter what you think you're writing about, you're going to end up writing about yourself and how you view the world and you know, it's going to be a little model of your own experience. So like if the pandemic is going on, I guess I'm just trying to say that, of course, that's going to come through. Like if I have to be inside for a prolonged period of time, I'm sure the movies are going to start, you know, having more interiors or being more about someone mm-hmm. who's all alone inside or whatever. But I still feel like the feeling of isolation and loneliness goes beyond the pandemic. I feel like people feel that way, you know, no matter what's going on.
Like in actuality, though, like the pandemic actually does make it harder to make bigger settings and have a bunch of like actors and stuff. And it's cheaper to have less actors in one space. So, I mean, on the surface, there's like practical reasons why we do that. But then again, you know, it results from the pandemic. It's interesting how like the pandemic causes us to have to move into more like isolated spaces, especially like last year, you know,
mm-hmm.
but it's just what it had to be. It could, you know, but it's about that because that's what it had to be.
Right. Yeah. Right. But I think I've always been interested in that because looking back at the movies before the pandemic, like Miss Freelance or like Gloss or Megan, it's like, I often just want to, you know, look into, I think a character when they're alone, it kind of shows them at their most vulnerable, which I just think is always a fascinating concept. Shay and I always, we joke all the time. Like when we meet somebody and, you know, they're like really all together and they're like, hey, how's it going? Nice to meet you, blah, blah. And then they walk away. We always joke that then they go home and like, you know, they, you know, beat their wife or whatever, you know, and then they sob in the corner. And you know,
yeah.
We just finished working for a client. It was like so nice all day. And then we, you know, everything was going so well. And then we just had this joke because like someone left a pickle jar open that imagine if he just like took the pickle jar and freaked out and like threw it across the room or something. There was like 15-year-old kids of this reality show too. It was like 17 of them. It was like imagine he just lost his temper in front of all these kids. It's just like I think if there's just like a sadistic part of us that thinks it would be just so funny if something like that happened right in front of us. Like, it's such a shock. You know,
right.
Like,
yeah.
And, you know, that's, I think in a way it inspires the writing of movies sometimes, because we're like, how funny would that be? And then, you know, later we're like, imagine something like that in a movie, you know?
Right. Right.
Well, yeah. And you're not making like comfort movies unless there's comfort in like a connection to what somebody's feeling and being like, oh my gosh, I felt that. Now I feel it.
I shouldn't be the guy who makes the comfort movie. I would not be good at it. And I'm so glad that there are guys who are good at it. You know, we need every genre for, you know, film to be, you know, respected by everybody or appreciated by everybody.
Right. Yeah. It's just one of those voyeuristic things where it's like you meet somebody and then you wonder, like, well, what is that guy really like? I'll never know. And then I think a movie kind of gives you that power of like, whatever the character may be, like for Daddy's Wallet, it's like this, you know, rich retired executive guy, you know, and it's like, okay, but what's really going on with him underneath? And I think that's also where the ideas come from too. Cause I remember I was living in Brooklyn and I saw like an old guy with a very young, like 20-year-old looking girl. And she's like, you know, really buttering him up and like kissing his cheek and has her arms around him and all that stuff. And I'm like, what's really going on here? You know, like I don't imagine that this guy is just like completely happy about his life all the time, given, you know, even though that's what he might want to portray. I think we all have like an inner darkness, or at least, you know, maybe, you know, that's just what I assume. Maybe there are perfectly happy, normal people, but I do.
I'm not gonna shy away. Right. What is that? And what's?
It's interesting. There's a story there, that. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Right. There's always a story and a background to someone's personal darkness. Yeah.
Yeah, I love when the stories come out about those talk show hosts like James Corden or like Ellen, you know, where they're just like so abusive, like it turns out. Like, would you think those people who are like having to put on those kinds of faces every night, like, you think they're not gonna like snap, you know, one day?
Yeah.
And then it's just so funny when that happens. Like, we love that.
Yeah.
It's funny and juicy and whatever. It's PR magazine type shit.
We talk all the time about making a movie about some Ellen like talk show host, and like, you know, the movie opens where she's all polite and happy and chipper on the show, and then, you know, we cut to the backstage and, you know, we see the real her, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, film gives a unique opportunity to kind of like peek in, and I definitely see how you do that. Shay, I wanted to ask, just so we don't forget and you let people know where to go. I mean, there's the,
oh yeah,
I saw you had a t-shirt for the band, like the band's music. Where do folks go? You on Bandcamp? Or they look for a web page to find the
Okay. I'll just throw it out there. Cronies is on Bandcamp. We're on, like, you know, all streaming.
Yeah.
And we're on Label of Goods, which is working on physical copies, tapes, stuff like that. We're on Cruel Nature Records, which I think our tapes sold out on those. I have some solo music on Cruel Nature Records, which I'll just like give like a shout out to, because they're great. Steve is
absolutely
great.
Awesome.
They're from the UK. Label of Goods also, Logan from that record label is amazing. He does great work, and it's my favorite label. And then like Cronies, The Real Coddington Factory, they're all on streaming. Bandcamp, obviously, just type it in Cronies New York City NYC or whatever would be an easy way to find it. And then the vinyl prints were done by Reptilian Records. Like, this is like kind of a new development, but the records are printed and they're going to get sold at this festival somewhere in Texas. I forget what it's called, but so, you know, shout out to those three record labels, Label of Goods, Reptilian Records, and Cruel Nature Records. Label of Goods and Cruel Nature also have some of my solo music, which there should be some tapes left of Real Coddington Factory on both of those labels. We're all over physical copies, you know, merch, all that kind of stuff. It's like whatever you want, you know. If you like our stuff, come hang out.
Yeah, we definitely want to lead people to it, as part of the big part of the show is kind of the community of interacting with, you know, the tangible and the digital art and the cassette tapes and
Yeah, it's nice to just be kind of available everywhere. Like, even for people who, like, what if there's someone who only plays music by tape, you know?
Right.
Tape, you know, we have tape, you know, it's great. It's just, it's good to be available, I think, as a musician. I think that's, like, your strongest ally, you know, these days in the music scene is just, like, you know, putting yourself out there, like, on YouTube or whatever. Or
you
just,
can be found.
You know, online.
Yeah.
Yeah, just being able to be found anywhere, like putting your records or physical copies in stores or whatever.
Yeah.
There's just so many different ways.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I'm going to check with Matt just a moment, make sure we talked about a lot of his work and where to find things. But I do, hey, Shay, we do have the one small but monstrous question of which we do have to ask, which is the titular part of the show is,
naturally.
Why the heck is there something rather than nothing, Shay? I think Matt didn't fully resolve that mystery that we've been searching for all the
time. Come on, man. What's wrong with you?
He didn't fully resolve it. He would have.
I'm sorry.
So, wait, your question is why is there something rather than nothing? So we're based on the premise that there is something rather than nothing.
Yeah, which you can attack. Which you can attack as well.
Can I attack that?
You can. You can. You are actively encouraged to do so.
Maybe I won't. I don't know if I want to. I think I agree that there's something rather than nothing. Imagine just not making any art. Imagine not making anything, you know, just make something, even if you're not going to like throw it out there on like, you know, just keep making art. You know, if you're not going to do it, you'll never get better. Like, that's what I do with my solo music is like, there's some stuff on Spotify, but there's a lot more on Bandcamp and just stuff that I haven't released that I just, you know, there's hundreds of tracks of just like me recording every song. It's like, it's just, you know, it's good exercise. It's like, why wouldn't you run on again, going back to the athleticism thing, it's like, why wouldn't you run on the treadmill every day if you wanted to be athletic? Like, why not do something? Why not do something rather than not something? You know what I mean?
That's good.
This is good.
I'm going to make my own podcast. It's going to be called Something Rather Than Not Something.
But hey,
and we're going to be competing.
I don't mind the competition. The competition in the realm that we're in is a very particular realm that I'm not sure is populated by a ton of folks. But I do feel
competitive, but almost like, you know, in a good way, influenced by some of the musicians around me that I think are really good. Or like even Matt as a filmmaker, like inspires me a lot as a musician, just any good artist I meet. And it's like, you know, it's good to be in like a healthy competition, almost like feeling like, you know, oh, that's a really cool passage by that band. Like, imagine if I had something like that in my music, but like different or this way or that way. Like, you know, there's definitely a lot of like, you know, admitted like copycat in my music. Like you listen to like, even my score in movies, it'll just, you know, it's not like it's its own thing. It sounds like, you know, it's an amalgamation of stuff that I like. And, you know, most of what I'm influenced by are the people around me. And, you know, I like bands that are famous. Like I like Rage Against the Machine and Nirvana, System and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
But then there's, I think my favorite bands actually are like my friends and people like from the music scene in New York. And some of my favorite filmmakers are, other than, you know, famous guys like Safdie Brothers, like, you know, Matt, I would say, you know, his films actually make me feel something.
Yeah.
Rather than not something.
That's good. Hey, Matt, I wanted to make sure, I mean, we talked about, you know, your films and such. I want to make sure we don't miss anything as far as, I don't know if there's a, you know, the film fest or where to look. I had mentioned to folks, I know you've had some reviews come out. Trusted Hands. I'll be doing that as well. But just anything
to see that. I'm so thankful that you're going to review Trusted Hands. It's so nice.
Well, I like the opportunity too. And I got to tell you guys. I mean, before I'll open up to you, Matt. Make sure we don't miss anything. But I think that for me, the podcast and being able to have both of you on is that. There is a piece where I think within a year or two, you're going to be, you know, people are going to see your film in a more massive way, and they're going to know And so it's like, I feel like a privilege just being able to talk with you and to be able to talk and write and review, because there's something going on different from your films, because that's why I want to talk to you. So I think all that's going to happen. I want folks to get excited and to see the great stuff you're creating. All right.
True faith.
Matt, anything I missed? Anything I missed, Matt?
That is so nice, Ken. Yeah, you brightened my day with that one. Appreciate it. Yeah, so Daddy's Wallet is screening in Manhattan on the 18th. That's next Friday. And you can get tickets on the BoweryFilmFestival.com. It's the Bowery Film Festival 2022 selection. The people, the folks behind the Bowery Film Festival, they've actually done like a bunch of smaller festivals throughout the city, you know, and they do a couple, I think, every few months or whatever. But the Bowery Film Festival is like their big one. So it's kind of it's a cool achievement to be honored and selected for that one, especially for Daddy's Wallet, which I think because of the pandemic had an issue getting screened. Like, we got into festivals and then they would be like online screenings. Yeah. So this will be Daddy's Wallet's first time.
Canceled a lot.
Yeah. So this is going to be the first time that Daddy's Wallet screens in a real movie theater, which is something I really am excited to see.
Awesome.
And then as far as Trusted Hands and in any of the other short films that, you know, we've made, those can just be found on my Vimeo, and you can get there via the link in my bio on Instagram.
Yeah. Thanks so much. I just recently connected to film as quite some time ago, maybe about 2.5 years ago. I had an activist, her name's Ana Del Rocio, and she's starring in a film that was made called Mother of Color. Actually, just debuted in Tacoma about 3 weeks ago, and its Portland debut at the Hollywood Theater was cool. Friday. And so I think it's really fascinating for me, like, in being able to talk about it and me trying to figure out on my side of like, when a film's made, how is it seen? Where does it show up? Where's the festival? Right. How do people write about it? So I'm learning a lot on that too, but it's also been quite a pleasure to see artists that I've interacted with and then see that the film had the Portland premiere on Friday. So really exciting to see the work that you both do. And just so everybody knows, we're going to have a track that's going to be at the end of this from the Real Coddington Factory called The Boof. Shay, anything you want to say about the track that will lead us out?
Yeah, just, Pass the Boof. And thanks for having us.
Yeah. Guys, great pleasure. Everybody. Yeah, definitely check out. We'll have it in the show notes. A lot of different places to find sound and video from Matt and Shay. And I'm going to hit up my folks. I don't know a ton of people in New York, but there are a good 10 to 20 people that I feel I can just tell them that they're supposed to be going to do something and to see a good film. So I'm going to be doing that with them. So everybody, we got the Boof taking us out. And I want to thank you guys both for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much.
I hear something. Fuck, it's Tyreek. What are we going to do?
I was David, my kids, I'm gonna put that new language on it! When I-
is Something Rather Than Nothing.